What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the Feminist Bar Podcast. The Feminist Bar Podcast. You ready? What's good? What's popping? Welcome to the Feminist Bar Podcast with your host, Tina Tsuemaka. It is such like a beautiful, peaceful evening here in Harare today. It's like 7:58 and I am here while my guest is in the UK, but I'm here with my lovely guest, Samantha. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Tina. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
It's long overdue. I'm really excited to have you here. Sam is a good friend of mine who also happens to be my publisher, who also happens to be a badass author, who also happens to be so many other things. And I guess she'll, you know, describe that and tell us who she is herself. But today we are going to be speaking about finding our feminism. Last week's episode, we spoke a little bit about bringing feminism into our families, and I thought that this would be a good segue into just continuing to talk about how we can challenge ourselves and how we can be better and how we can be better feminists, how we can bring feminism to other people as well. So we're just going to be talking about, yeah, how we found our feminism. Sam, do you want to like go ahead and like introduce yourself to the people? You want to tell them who you are, what you do, what you love, anything that you want them to know that can help them know you a little bit more as we have this conversation?
Okay, thanks, Tina. So yeah, I'm an author. I write prose and poetry. I started writing around 2017, 2018. And I published my first works in 2020. And when I published my own works, that's when I decided to branch into publishing other people. And of course, that's how we met Tina Tsuemaka, because I've done things like compile anthologies of short stories for women. I'll get a bit more into that later. But, you know, in addition to writing and publishing, I'm also a regulatory consultant here in the UK. I work within financial services businesses as a risk management / compliance and regulatory professional. And that's how I make money. But my passion is writing and publishing. I'm married with two kids. I live in Wales in the United Kingdom. And I'm a very sort of crafty and hands-on person. I nurture like a big collection of plants. I'm into plants. I do a bit of knitting. I do a bit of baking. I do all these sort of hands-on things. But the thing that takes up most of my time is the writing and publishing. And I think that's all there is to know about me, I think.
Thank you, Sam. Wow, so wholesome. I didn't know about all of the knitting stuff. I just keep seeing you on Instagram taking your very wholesome, beautiful walks.
Oh, thank you. Oh yes, I walk as well. I walk every day. That's the other thing. I'm an avid walker, and I think most of my the inception of most of my creative ideas happens when I'm walking, actually. So yeah, walking is the other thing I do a lot, and sometimes I post pictures and videos about my little outdoor adventures. But yeah, I do a lot of stuff. I think I'm a little bit crazy, but yeah, I do a lot of stuff.
Thanks, Sam. So I thought it was really important to hear you introduce yourself in detail just because of the nature of this episode. I find that this like this episode is quite personal because I think that like our feminist journeys are very personal to us and the way in which we find them and like how we embark on our like freedom journeys, whatever. But anyway, so for those of you who actually have not read my book, Them and I've Hated, towards the end, I speak about what we're about to speak about briefly, which was just my feminist enlightenment. And I think, you know, I'm going to ask you, Sam, what are some of the things that brought about yours? But I just wanted to kind of mention some things that brought about mine, which was that, like, growing up, I always felt as though I was on the outside looking in, and things never quite felt right to me. There's so many things that I just didn't understand, and it always felt like it always was that boys and men seem to always command the attention in the room, the power in the room, in a way that as a child I did not understand. So obviously, like, growing up, I was then privileged enough to, like, go to uni and actually see what these dynamics mean and what it means and why things were that way, and kind of, like, piece together bit by bit, bit by bit, bit by bit. And then specifically when I actually started dating, for me, that's the shit that drove me fucking crazy, because anyone who tries to date will tell you that, like, men are insane and unstable people. So it was just kind of those realizations that I always had to show up. I always had to be the best I could be. I always had to be this. I always had to be that. I always had to be something for someone else, and they never, ever, ever had to do anything for me. Right. And even when they could just show up as they are, they were always allowed to be basic. And this is in relationships. This is in the classroom. This is in their jobs. And I think for me, just kind of in that moment, somewhere between the ages of, like, 20, 21, 22, my eyes kind of started opening, and things that I was previously told were flowery, they did not feel so flowery anymore. Like, I was not enjoying sex. I was not even orgasming. So what really is the prize? Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. I mean, anyway, guys, buy my book, go read it, read about the enlightenment. Today's about Sam. So Sam, you want to share with us maybe, like, what are some of the things that brought about your feminist enlightenment, and when did those things happen for you? When did they start to click for you? And when did you finally, like, you know, act on them?
Well, that's a big question. I think, like you, it all started in sort of childhood, because I think I was surrounded by misogyny and the suffering of women. Just generally speaking, it was all over. Wherever you looked, it was there. Or whether it was sort of in the family, friends or families, church, at school, wherever, it was everywhere. It was, you know, hearing that so-and-so who drives this beautiful car, the husband cheated, and the whole time. You know, I come from Mashingo, which is a very small town, so we got to hear everything. Even as a child, you'd hear the grown-ups talking about this, you know, the scandals and the things that were happening in town. So you'd get to hear about this even as a child, you know. So, you know, so-and-so got beaten up at the weekends, but they're not going anywhere. And Kashinga, they're brave. You know, so I saw this growing up. Every single day, it was all over. You know, we had female, women teachers that came to class with black eyes because they'd been beaten up at the weekend by their husbands. You know, I grew up in the era where, you know, the older women we looked up to, some of them worked really hard, but, you know, we knew that their salaries went into their husbands' bank accounts. And it was little things like that that we heard and saw. And like you, I was constantly questioning why that was so. You know, it just didn't seem normal. But, you know, as you know, our society is very, very good at gaslighting us into thinking that it's part of our culture. You know, you've got to be a good girl, you've got to, you know, but it was quite clear that there really was no reward. You know, I was just, I was surrounded by, you know, the pain of women growing up. And I write, and that's what I write about that in my stories, in my poems. It's all over the place, because now as a grown up, it makes more sense. As a child growing up, it was kind of seeing that and questioning it, but getting no sensible answers to what was going on. It was always the cliche, it's our culture, or you have to be seen to stay long in your marriage. I mean, the success of marriage was always measured in terms of longevity rather than the quality of the marriage, and we were all gaslighted into thinking that was the right thing. And so I don't know, I always felt like growing up we were sort of institutionalized, for lack of a better word, we're institutionalized into thinking that was normal. I mean, like I mentioned before, I come from Ashingo, and I'm sure you've heard people joking on social media that, you know, the women from Ashingo are the most expensive to pay for in terms of bride price. And, you know, I think about that a lot. Like, why would this particular group of women be the most expensive? And I kind of suspect that it's because they're probably the most self-sacrificing women. They're the most institutionalized. They're the most, you know, and I come from that part of the world, you know, and that actually hurts to speak about it. But that is the truth. That is, you have a, you know, a group of women that have been singled out as these are the most expensive in the country. And people kind of speak of it proudly or whatever. But I don't know. I don't think it's anything to be proud of. It really kind of, it's telling. That is your clue that, you know, these people are really, really institutionalized. And I was part of that, you know, but I still questioned because, you know, as you know, what happens in institutions is you're always being drawn further and further away from your true self. And what happens eventually when you ignore your gut and you're told that you're something that you're not, whatever, is eventually you're going to break, you know, you will explode. And that's when the real enlightenment happens. So, yeah, so I grew up around, you know, suffering. And then, you know, sort of further along, like when I was in high school and started sort of majoring in literature in English, we started reading about the patriarchy. You know, I at A level, one of the books I read was Sitsidanga Rembwe's Nervous Conditions. And so it's when you start reading and learning that in school that you realize that, oh my gosh, okay, this is real. This is, so I wasn't going mad. I was right to question all these things I've been seeing and questioning all along. You know, and then we got introduced to the capitalist patriarchal systems, like the one in the UK. We saw that through texts like Great Expectations, Dickens' Great Expectations. And so at that age, I was kind of beginning to see that my feelings were real, my thoughts were validated, but I myself hadn't experienced the ills of the patriarchy. So it was more theoretical at that point. Of course, I'd seen other people suffering, but, you know, and then fast forward, you know, finish school, finish uni, and then, well, it's your turn to get married now, you girl from Mashingo. Yeah, it's your turn. And then, I met my husband, you know, when we were kids. So we've known each other for a very, very long time. You know, we love each other and everything else. But, you know, that didn't exclude us from, you know, the ills of the patriarchal system. We were victims of the patriarchal system. We did as we were told, you know. When you're about to get married, you know, you're told, oh, you've got to do this. You don't talk about the things that are happening in your home. You don't do this. You know, you're under your husband. So, you know, you're really institutionalizing into this. And at first it worked. You know, it really worked. We were doing as we were taught. And then, of course, we migrated to the UK, which is obviously capitalist, patriarchal UK. And yeah, so it's when I sort of went into employment. You know, I did my studies, got qualified, and you know, I'm working in the corporate world, and of course, you know, I experienced the worst sexism and racism combined in those environments, because as a Black African woman, what are you doing here? You know, the middle-aged white men, the old boys club, they don't want you there. They don't want to be told what to do by a Black woman. It just kind of, you know, they do really make you suffer. You have to work harder than everybody else to prove your worth. So you're in that environment. You're not just doing your 9 to 5. You're also trying to comply with the values and the culture of these institutions. So you're already not being yourself. You know, you're already not being yourself. You're acting. You're, you know, you're playing a role. You're trying to fit in terms of culture, in terms of the color of your skin, in terms of your sex. You know, most of the jobs or the roles I've performed, I've been the only female working with these, you know, men. And they don't want you there. You know, they kind of hire you because they have to tick a box that they're being diverse and blah, blah, blah. But once you're there, they will make you suffer. And so I went through that. So you're working harder than everybody else to prove your worth, despite being qualified, despite knowing what you're talking about, despite all that. But, you know, they will make you suffer in one way or the other. You're working harder than everybody else, but you're the one who's not getting the pay rises. You're not getting the bonuses. You're not getting the promotions. And you're constantly being reprimanded for, you know, no apparent reason. So yeah. There's that going on one side. And then after work you're going home where you're a full-time mom, the nanny, the wife, the everything. And then that is the suffering that comes with that for me was what really kind of brought the enlightenment. It forced me to have those difficult conversations with husband to explain where I was coming from. And luckily he understood that we were both victims of, you know, of the system, and we had to make huge changes in how our relationship worked. So yeah, that's just a summary. I think, if you know, the combination of seeing women suffering growing up in and outside of the institution of marriage, and then growing up and getting into the institution, the various institutions I've worked, I think those are the things that you know, brought about the suffering that led to my enlightenment.
Yeah. Do you, like, you described like so many important like parts of your life, right? That I just have to ask, like, do you ever feel like you found it late or later than you wanted to? Because there's a lot of young kids out there, the Gen Zs, are so conscious. These people are 12 years old and telling you about the patriarchy and the different norms that they are choosing to opt out of just because of how problematic they are. And I'm like, I didn't even know what the word problematic meant when I was 12 years old. And sometimes I guess I look at myself and I'm like, okay, you know, 2022, you know, is not a bad age to find yourself at all. Like, I'm happy whenever I would have found myself, I would have been happy to, because there are people who live and die according to societal norms. Do you know what I mean? But sometimes I'm just like, how different would my life have been? How different would my relationships, my friendships, my chosen family, my relationships with the people around me, how different would they have been if I was someone who had found that enlightenment earlier on in their life?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way because growing up, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have social media. I mean, with things like, if I got my first email in the year 2000, and I didn't even use it that much. And then I just, because we grew up without social media and the internet, I never felt the need to be on social media until, you know, 2020. So that's, you know, so I only joined social media in 2020 because I wanted to market the books I publish. But prior to that, I was just, you know, I kind of had that there's nothing out there for me type of attitude, which was wrong. But I genuinely believe that there was.
Oh my God, Sam, there's nothing out there for me.
There's nothing out there for me. So despite kind of being a natural feminist, in that I hadn't read about it anyway, I hadn't seen anyone discussing anything feminist. Like, I wasn't a conscious feminist. I just kind of went with, this doesn't look right, or this is wrong, or whatever. And I went with that. And my gut was right. It, you know, is I was able to prove when I finally joined the you know, the social media and found my tribe. You know, you can imagine the shock when I went on Twitter and the first people I found were feminists. And I think it's because I was just naturally drawn to the things they spoke about and tweeted about. And I was really shocked the first few days that, wow, people can actually say this publicly. Oh my God, like, wow, like, I was really surprised. So yeah, so you know, I'm talking when I was probably around 39, 38, 39. That's when I was like, okay, I'm gonna do social media now. And yeah, so yes, I definitely found a lot of information too late, probably in life, maybe not too late, but very late. I mean, my own daughter knows more about feminism than I do, and she's 16. So I do feel that I found a lot of stuff very late. But it's
Twitter feminist. Shout out to the social media feminists, because I would say that when I was kind of starting out my feminist journey as well, I was on social media. I was gravitating towards a lot of people. I was wondering mm-hmm. where they were getting the words to describe things and injustices. They were describing feelings that I felt but did not know how to name. And they were giving these things names, and they were telling me that these things are valid, and we feel the same things, and women before us have felt the same things, and queer people before us have felt the same thing. And even through there, that's where I then found like access resources to like feminist texts, so like feminist YouTubers to then like kind of enrich the information. So yeah, like shout out to the social media feminists for real.
Absolutely.
Some of the issues or any issues that you've had within your community that have emerged, maybe that you didn't have a few years ago, a decade ago, 2 decades ago, that are coming to you just because of embracing this feminism? Like, what are the community problems we have when we embrace these new freedoms?
Oh, do you know what? There's a lot. I think in summary, it's you get punished for it. You know, there's no two ways about it. You get punished for it. So there's condemnation, there's disproportionate scrutiny, abandonment. You may be shamed. I mean, the list is long. There are friends and family who don't speak with me anymore because it's what I'm doing is, you know, shameful, and they don't want to be associated with a person who does shameful things. I'll give you a little like a personal example, actually. A couple of years ago, a husband of a cousin of mine was staying with us, and I think I'd called out a relative's abuse, someone else's husband's abusive behavior, and I was just calling it out and just literally going, this is nonsense, this is bullshit, basically. And and he'd been sort of watching quietly, and then from nowhere he just came straight to my face and said, "You're a feminist, and I don't want you anyway. I don't want my wife anywhere near you." And at the time, he just said it straight to my face, like, "I don't want my wife anywhere near you," and he's talking about my cousin. So that's a nice little example of it may not be those people's faults, actually, like those who have moved away from me. They may have husbands to impress, or they may have people who are not yet, you know, who haven't yet bought into feminism, who don't want that sort of thing going on in their marriages or in their relationships. So I've had a lot of people who just don't speak with me anymore because they haven't said why, but I know why, because I have this little example where, you know, a guy comes to me and says, "Well, I won't have my wife anywhere near you because of the way you think." And at the time, I hadn't even joined social media, so I wasn't aware of like the feminist movement we just spoke about. I was just being me. I was just being myself. And I just laughed it off because I thought he was joking. Because who says that?
He was not joking.
He wasn't joking. And it's only now when I'm on social media and I see how men react to feminists, how men sort of shame and reprimand feminists on social media, that it all makes sense now. I mean, I think about it a lot now because I see it happening every day, that you get, you know, you get told off, you get shouted at, you get called names if you're trying to fight for equality and all that. So yeah, so that's what happens. I don't know, sometimes you're also discredited by being called things. You know, people, you know, dub you as a liar or someone who's mentally unstable, just so that no one takes seriously anything that comes out of your mouth or anything you write. Because if they manage to discredit you, you know, at a personal level, anything else you do becomes unreal. Like no one, there are people out there who try to ensure that no one believes anything you say or anything you do, or no one buys into anything you're doing. And it's all part of the design of the system. I mean, if you look at, if you look at the likes of Meghan and Harry and what they're doing, you know, it's like textbook stuff. You know, they're trying to discredit them, trying to make them look crazy or whatever. Because we all know that exposure stops abuse or it reduces it or whatever. So people don't like, you know, people don't like it when you expose some of these things, the ills of the patriarchy. The men don't like that because obviously they want to keep gaining from it. So when you try to expose some of these things that happen, within a patriarchal society, you will be reprimanded, you will be called names, people will move away from you. But I think if you're conscious of who you really are, because it's really about knowing who you are and being your true self and sticking with it. If your gut tells you that this is wrong and this is uncomfortable or this causes suffering, why would you want to continue or stick with that? You just have to do what's right. So, never mind all this stuff. You know, we just have to keep doing what we're doing because we just have to. It's who we are.
Yeah. On what you're saying about the discrediting, like I see it on social media all the time. Like I will tweet something and I will have someone respond to me and be like, well, you're a feminist anyway, so what do you know? And I'm like, what in the confirmation bias misogyny is this? Because you don't even know me, but you've seen something and immediately you've decided. But for me, like, that doesn't even annoy me. In fact, it makes me want to call myself a feminist even more. It makes me want to double down. And even when we talk together as like feminists, and sometimes people are like, well, it's all about our rights. I believe in women's rights, but you know, I'm not a feminist. I'm like, I am a feminist. Call me a fucking feminist.
Right? Yeah.
Because the naming is political. The naming is so political that it riles people up when they just see it. I haven't said anything to you, but you're already riled up. And that's just what I was thinking when you were telling me about this person, because I thought it was so powerful that you were at a time that you were not even calling yourself a feminist yet. And yet here you were with this like misogynistic patriarch, and they immediately identified in you like a power, like this person is tuned into their place in the world and they know how to stand up for themselves, which is something that makes people uncomfortable. Because how could we be equal when what I consider normal is reigning power over you?
Yeah. And I mean, I think for me, what really disturbs me or what shocks me is when women denounce feminism or, you know, I absolutely don't get it. Or when it's women attacking other women or women being misogynistic towards other women, I think for me that is the worst form of misogyny, because I just think as long as we are divided, we're never going to win against the patriarchy, and the patriarchy loves it. You know, they've obviously nurtured and institutionalized their foot soldiers and patriarchal princesses, and they work hard for the men, and it just really makes me sad. And part of what I try to do in my writing is to bring those issues forward as well. I talk about characters that, you know, women characters that hate other women and how it's bad for everybody. But I think for me that is and I mean a lot of the problems I've experienced at community level, they're also from, you know, women as well. You know, I've had the older women kind of coming to me and going, oh, we heard you writing nonsense these days. Do you know, if you run out of things to write about, why are you writing at all? Don't you have a house to clean? Don't you have a husband to cook for? And where do you find the time to write? I mean, is your house clean enough? Like, why are you writing?
Patriarchy mobilizes those who can keep it. So when I actually see these things, and even this, like, this internalized and outrightly performed misogyny by women, for me it's only further proof of like how bad and how like intricately woven patriarchy is and everything. Like, we're always talking about this platform.
I look
at them and I'm like, baby, you're a victim. Like,
oh yes,
yeah, like I'm so sorry to you. Like, I feel sorry for you while I am angry at you for you know, spreading this poison. It's like you are so far deep. I don't even know if you will ever enjoy the freedom of living on your own terms.
I know, but as the saying goes, right, you will, you know, men will embarrass you, and the patriarchy always comes for you. You're literally just waiting your turn.
So yeah, I don't, like you said, there's no reward. There's no reward.
There's no reward.
There's no automatic protection from opting out. Like, absolutely. We all remain under that umbrella of violence.
Yeah. And I think the more loyal you are to the system, the more, I don't know, the more it will damage you when your turn comes. It will be vicious, you know, and, you know, and you'll be heartbroken as well, because you'll think to yourself, but I've been such a good girl. You know, I've been such a good girl. I've done all these wonderful things.
I've done this, I've done that. And I think some of that bitterness is about that, because you're saying that you've had older women coming to you and saying, oh, you're writing nonsense. Why aren't you feeding your husband? Why aren't you doing this? And for them, it's like, I have dedicated 50 years to serving this man, to serving my marriage, to being a woman who fits into this box. So how dare you come and make that mean nothing? If you can do this, that means I have wasted my life when I could have done something else. And while they might not be processing it exactly like that, it is just the pent up at the center of it all. Like, that is what all of that negativity is about. Like, how dare you, when we have been indentured servants, you know what I mean? We are still serving our time, and you are just opting out.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Oh my goodness, I didn't realize that, but that's a very valid point.
Everyone's in prison, and you just like opened your door and you walked out, and you're like, these gates are not locked. You can get out.
Absolutely.
It's like, how can we get out? We don't know what's on the outside.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you just have to you just have to save yourself. You just have to take the risk, because, you know, in either way, you're in pain, right? You're already in pain. So what's there to be? There's nothing to lose. Go out there.
There's also a level of privilege in this conversation. There are many women that will never have the resources or even the access to information. There are many women who will never even have the Twitter to be able to download.
Absolutely.
To find, you know, those small steps to that enlightenment. So the last question that I want to ask you is, and I'm sure there's so many things, but thus far, like, what has been the best part about being a feminist?
There is a lot, but I think experiencing authentic love has been the best part, because I think whoever chooses to stay in your life after your feminist enlightenment loves you truly, and you can be as real as you like with those people. And I think, like, unlearning, you know, the internalized misogyny and decentering men has been the most precious thing for me, because I don't know, I love myself a lot more than I did before my enlightenment. And I have so much, like, self-compassion. And I think that's a good thing. It's just a good thing. And really, it goes down to things as simple as when we were growing up and you're dishing out the food, the bigger pieces of meat go to the men. You know what I mean? And now, if I want to, if I've cooked the food and I want that piece of chicken,
I'm
taking it because I cooked it.
And it's like, what are you actually going to do about it?
Exactly. So it goes down to the simplest things, just the little things, the little everyday things. And it's a beautiful feeling to just know that I'm consciously putting myself first every single day. And it's good. It's beautiful. And I know that my children see it and they watch it and they emulate and they love it, because they're learning that. They're not having to learn the toxic stuff that they have to unlearn later on in life, you know. So it's lovely to live that authentic life and show them what real love looks like. And I think that really is the best part, you know, about being a feminist. And
I love that. That's so true. Because when you are freed from everyone's expectations and from the boxes and the expectations, you really become and embrace your true self. So you're meeting Absolutely. Everyone from a place of authenticity, which means those mm-hmm. who love you for you. And mm-hmm. even in the romantic relationships that you have, those that love you for you and not what you can do for them, not how you serve them, not what society thinks it should look like, mm-hmm. why. So that's really dope. And definitely in the last episode that we had of the Feminist Bar, you should really check it out, Sam. We actually talk about how a form of protest is just living your life as you, because that sets an example for the people before you. Even if you're not saying anything to them, they can see that this is a worthwhile way to live and these are worthwhile things to stand up for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're very right there. And I mean, I've had people who say to me, oh my gosh, what you write? Do your kids know that you write this? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, my daughter especially reads my, she reads my novels, she reads my poetry, crude as it may be, or deep as it may be. She reads it and she asks questions and I answer them, because I don't want to promote that whole, oh, we don't talk about this, culture. We will talk about it, because she's going to experience it in less than 5 years. She's going to be in her 20s. And, you have to demonstrate what freedom looks like. You don't tell it to anybody, you demonstrate it. And that's how other people learn as well. So you just have to live freely, because that is the best way to live.
Yeah, that's true. I love that. Thank you. Again, I would really love to have a follow-up of this episode with someone, who has a similar and yet different experience, maybe someone from a different country, because obviously there's a lot of contextual stuff in this. You were in Zim, you moved to the UK, you're Zimbabwean still. I wonder what it is like, what it might be like to navigate a similar experience, but all doing it from home, right? Imagining what it might have been like had you stayed in Zim, etc. It's so much to unpack, and I love talking about this, and I love hearing the different ways that people talk about how they find their feminism, and it's all this the smallest stuff. I read an article from a long time ago, I think it was 2015, and for some people they were I heard this Beyonce song, and after that I started researching on feminism, and I was like, that's hilarious. And it's you know what? Your freedom will find you. And I wish it was so for everybody. But for those of us whose freedom has found us, we're gonna take that freedom to the others.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here and for making the time to come and talk about this episode. But mostly thank you for sharing so much about your personal journey and your personal life. For other people to hear. I know that they will find it incredibly inspiring. I want to give you, this the stage, the mic, the platform to say any last words, to say, anything that you want to say, anything that you didn't feel like you said, or your parting words, whatever.
thank you, Tina. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you. I wish we could go on and on and on, because there's so much to talk about. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to come here and speak with you. I think my final words are, I think feminism goes beyond fighting for social, political, and economic equality of the sexes. I think it's about dismantling misogyny through intentional acts of love for women. So I just want to encourage anyone who's listening, who's interested in changing or in finding their enlightenment, that when you do find it, remember that it's also about love. You can't claim that you're a feminist because you're a guy who gets along with their sister and their mother or whatever. You have to there's intentional acts of love. Do something, rather than just say whatever just, it's easy to talk, but show it through your actions. I think it's we need to be more intentional in how we and how we live our lives. It's about how we say things to people, how we you know, treat other people. We need to remember that it's also about dismantling misogyny. Misogyny is the hatred of women. So we want to do the opposite of hating women. And I think that's what I want to leave here. Let's just be more loving towards women. And I think that might even be the first step towards dismantling this big ugly system called the patriarchy. And if you don't mind, I'm just gonna plug some of my works. If you
want to read some of them,
if you want to read some of the stuff I've written, I've got a novel called Painting a Mirage out there, and I've just released a collection of poems called Starfish Blossoms. Feel free to, you know, buy my works and come and have a chat with me about them if you want to. I'd really like that. Thank you very much, Tinatswe, for this opportunity.
I will actually put a link to your books in the episode notes for those of you who want to check it out.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for the support of the podcast. Please go ahead and follow and engage on Twitter, on Instagram at the Feminist Bar Podcast. And yeah, you'll find me in the social media streets as soon as you get to that page. So yeah, thank you, and I'll see you next week. That's a wrap on this episode.